You're listening to Inside Appalachia. I'm Roxy Todd. And now we'll listen to the next installment of The Struggle to Stay. Last time we met Derek Akow, a young man from Harlan County, Kentucky, whose grandparents instilled in him a desire to leave Appalachia, to go to college and find opportunity out of state.
I got it in my head that I could make it out and actually be something for myself by myself.
Derek was eventually awarded a college scholarship to play football, and it looked like his dreams to leave were coming true. But once he got there, an old neck injury led him to the difficult decision to drop out of school and come back home.
I want to be able to walk, so I just say I'm just going to give up sports for now and just come back down here.
Now he's back in Harlan County, living with his mom and grandma, trying to figure out what's next. He's looking for work locally, but says it might be easier in California, where some of his extended family now lives. As we'll hear, this dream of leaving home to find opportunity elsewhere is a repeating theme in Derek's family history. In this installment of The Struggle to Stay, Derek and his family share nearly 100 years of their search for a better life. Through it all, their home base has remained in eastern Kentucky, even though they've faced difficulties here. And a warning, there is some offensive language in the story in which the N-word is used several times. The segment might be tough for some listeners. WMMT's Benny Becker reports.
Generation after generation, people in Derek's family have felt pressure to move away from home. The struggle to stay is a central part of Derek's family history and the history of his hometown, a little place called Lynch.
How do you feel about the name of this town?
You know, it don't bother me much. You know, I just wish it was named different because, you know, Lynch and you got lynchings and stuff like that.
Lynch was actually named after Thomas Lynch. He was an executive at U.S. Steel, the company that built this coal camp town back in 1917. Today, there are yard signs posted all around Lynch to let everyone know that the town is celebrating 100 years of existence, here at the foot of Kentucky's highest peak, which happens to be named Black Mountain.
Black Mountain, live in Lynch, in a black community, you know. what can you say to it, you know?
I asked Derek if he knew much about his family's history and how they'd come to live in Lynch.
My grandma and my mom down here, they don't really say much about it. Karita knows more about it. She probably talks about it the most.
Derek's talking about his cousin, Karita Brown.
Hello, my name is Karita Brown. I am a visiting assistant professor at UNC Chapel Hill. I'm also full-time faculty in the Department of Sociology at University of California at Los Angeles.
Karita has done a lot of research about how generations of African Americans have moved in and out of coal towns like Lynch. She's actually writing a book about it. Here's how Derek describes her.
She does a lot of interviews around here. Everybody knows who she is. One thing that everybody loves about her is her hair. It's like really poofy and curly. Just beautiful. I love it. That's why I'm trying to get my hair like hers. Big and natural.
Karita told me she's not surprised that Derek hasn't heard much about how his family first came to Lynch.
Memory is a very complicated thing with the African-American experience. One of my mentors, Tony Bogues, calls slavery a historical catastrophe, a shattering of who you are and where you come from. You don't always want to be remembering that. Their lives, their roots, their origin stories started in Kentucky, and their parents weren't necessarily trying to tell them all their horror stories or what they endured to get there.
Even though it's not something Derek's talked about much, I think that if you want to understand Derek's struggle to stay, you have to understand that many parts of his struggle are forces that his family has been dealing with for generations.
This has been a story of African-American struggle and striving that we can trace through American history because we're always getting kicked out or moved from where we settle down.
So now we're going to speed through 100 years of Derek's family history, starting with the origin story.
How the hell did all these black folks get to Harlan County, Kentucky? When the mining industry came into eastern Kentucky, we're at the point of world war and the country needs steel. Coal is one of the products to make steel. So the mining industries found themselves with an insatiable need for labor.
Mining companies like the one that built and owned Lynch sent labor agents far and wide to recruit coal miners. One place where they recruited was Alabama, where Derek's great-granddad came from.
They were in a dire situation in the late 1800s, early 1900s in Alabama, and leaving Alabama was more of an escape.
Slavery had technically been abolished, but many African Americans were still trapped doing forced labor in abusive conditions. Some were stuck in unfair farming contracts, and others were arrested, often on flimsy charges, then sold to industries that needed workers. Many of these leased convicts ended up working in coal mines, where about 1 in 20 workers would die each year. It was dangerous to stay in Alabama, but it was also dangerous to leave. Derek's great-granddad used to tell a story about one scary encounter that happened while he was traveling to Kentucky.
He was unsure if they were going to kill him right there.
Cynthia Harrington remembers how her dad, Derek's great-granddad, used to tell the story.
He used to get drunk, and he basically told us the same story when he got drunk about how he hoboed, we call it hitchhike, from Alabama because he had heard about the jobs in the mines. He said he was walking, and these white men saw him one day, and they said, "Hey, nigger, where you going?" So he told them that he was going to Kentucky to get a job. And they said, "We heard that niggas can preach." So they said to him, "Nigga, preach." He said he had to do it because he was a little afraid. And then he said, after he preached, they said, "Well, we heard niggas like to dance." They said, "Nigga, dance." And, you know, once he danced and they taunted him some more, they let him go.
In Lynch, he started a large family, 14 kids, one of whom is Derek's grandma. There was decent paying work for a while, but then the coal industry hit a bump due to some forces that might sound familiar to people watching today's coal downturn. Coal was losing ground to competition from another fossil fuel, and coal miners were being replaced by fancy new mining machines.
When we come to the mid-1940s, as the country is transitioning its dependence from coal to oil, the mining industry began to mechanize heavily. There was not so much of a need for all of that manual labor. As quickly as they pulled these people in, they shut them out. I know in the case of Lynch, the African Americans were the first to be cut out of the labor economy.
Many folks in Lynch moved away.
Harlan County lost 70% of its African American population between the years of 1940 and 1970. That is an extreme outmigration.
Derek's grandma was part of that wave of people who left Lynch. She followed some of her older siblings to New York City. There, she met her husband, Derek's grandpa, who'd come from Trinidad. Then, in the 70s, her husband lost his job, just as the coal industry started to bounce back. Mines in Harlan County were hiring again, and Derek's grandma wanted to get her kids away from the heroin epidemic that had arrived in New York. So they moved to Lynch.
When drugs started getting bad, came back to raise my kids, and I've been ever since.
Derek's grandma actually worked in the mines too for a year, around 1979. Partly because she wanted to see what it was like, and partly because her husband had told her not to.
He always tell me, "You ain't going no mine." So I went in there. I worked close to a year on a belt line. And I enjoyed it. It really paid good. But I need to be home. That was my job, be home, my kids.
This boom, like the last one, turned into a bust. And once again, many folks in Lynch moved away. Among them was Derek's mom, Katina Akal.
When the coal mine shut down here, everybody had no choice but to move. I moved off after I graduated high school. I had went to Lexington. I went to University of Kentucky, but I dropped out after I had Derek. The job I was working in was third shift, and I didn't have anybody to watch him. So I brought him here with my mom. So I was basically in Lexington for about 10 years, but I was always back and forth. And then after I had my younger son, I just decided to come back home, and best decision I ever made.
Derek's mom, Katina, got a job at a factory. Then she went back to school and managed to get a job close to home that she loves.
I counsel at-risk kids. I felt like this is what I was meant to do.
Derek's mom and grandma both found their way back to Lynch, but they were kind of the exception.
In the neighborhood we live in, it was somebody in every house. Now we live here and then this three houses empty. This next house and this three houses empty. It is just terrible now.
Derek's cousin, Carita Brown, is from one of those branches of the family that didn't move back. She grew up in New York on Long Island, but her family visited Lynch at least once a year, and Carita thought it was a magical place.
This was a town that was segregated. So, you know, all I knew was that it was this black world. I thought everyone was black, not only in Lynch, but all Appalachia, in my mind, was black.
When out-of-town folks would come to visit, Carita and the rest of the family would often end up gathering at the house that Derek lives in with his grandma and his mom.
Everybody wants to go there and hang out. The best food is going to be there, the biggest laughs. That house, I think, is in one of the most iconic locations for the remnants of the black community in Lynch, because it is directly across the street from the ballpark, and that park is where everything went down. But what really, I think, makes that house a central location is that it is right behind the Lynch-colored public school. Up until 1963, the schools were racially segregated in Harlan County, and it was the premier black school. And the building is now owned by the Eastern Kentucky Social Club. So that building has so much symbolic meaning to the black community, and it's still a gathering place.
Because the social club is so symbolic, it has sometimes become a target. Derek remembers a story his granddad used to tell him about an event that's something of a town legend.
40-something years ago, a group of KKK people was going to try to tear that place down or something like that. My granddad told me how everybody was sitting there ready on their houses, guns out, you know, loaded up, ready for them to show up. And I could just picture my granddad just pointing his gun, just ready for something to happen. But you know what? They never showed up, you know, so I believe that's just some racist people around here, but I don't believe that they're brave enough to show up in Lynch, you know, because Lynch has a history, you know. You know, the people down here don't play around, you know.
In a way, his home's reputation for violence has made Derek feel safer. But the reputation alone hasn't always been enough to keep Derek safe.
It was 2015. I went to a house party. My girlfriend at the time, she walked up a hill. It was away from the party. And I was following right behind her, and there was this guy jogging behind me, just screaming at Emmer like crazy. One of them had a knife on him, and like he flicked that knife out. He was just sitting there holding it, just looking at me. My life flashed before my eyes. I was like, well, these guys are going to probably try to kill me or something, so I'm probably have to fight for my life. And I looked at my girlfriend. My girlfriend was just sitting there just shaking. She didn't know what to do. So I just like, you know, I was just ready to go. The first thing I done, you know, it was swung on the dude that had the knife first. Boom, knocked him out, first hit. The other dude, he punched me and I didn't even feel it. Boom, knocked him out. And so, you know, the guy with the knife just kept on going after him. You know, started beating him half to death, you know, going crazy, beating up these two dudes. You know, it looked like I killed him, you know, two bodies on the ground. That's what it looked like. I remember I came home. It was like 7 o'clock in the morning. I had a blue hoodie on and I had blood all over my hoodie, my pants, the white part of my shoes. All right here was covered in blood. Later on that day, got a phone call, you know, from the cops, and they was like, man, you probably had to go to jail for assault or almost attempted murder, because that guy that had that knife apparently had a really bad concussion. I told him the full story. I was like, listen, dude, he had a knife on him, so I'm fighting for my life. You know, he could have stabbed me in my neck or something. You know, I wouldn't be here, you know. I told the cops about that stuff, and then they dropped the charges on me. They asked me if I'm going to press charges on them. I said, you know, I felt bad for, you know, for what I did. The big talk in town was like, oh man, Derek about killed a dude. That was like the biggest talk for like almost like 3 months, you know. And usually I didn't like, you know, step out the house, you know. You know, if I had to fight, that I have to, but it's just, I was so embarrassed of like what I'd done to that man. And I broke his jaw in two different places and fractured his skull with the kick that I gave him. And Like, what's crazy about it was that, like, 2 months after that, you know, I went to another house party and he was up there. And he had scars all over his face. He had one scar on his forehead. And he came up to me and he was like, "Man, I'm so sorry for what happened. I was drunk. You really beat me up and you made me realize I don't need to be doing that." I said, "I forgive you. Do you guys forgive me?" And he was like, "Yeah." He was just sitting there talking to me and everything. He tried to hug up on me and everything, you know. And I give him a hug back, you know, just be friendly. Me and those guys were cool now, so everything's cool.
I guess I'm wondering if that experience pushed you more towards wanting to leave at all or, like, made you less comfortable with this area.
I mean, no. I mean, it can happen anywhere. You know, it's just crazy, you know, to sit here and think about, you know, anywhere it can happen. You know, anywhere. I was so friendly with everybody around here, you know. I didn't think it would happen towards me, but it did. It didn't push me to move, but it did push me to start looking somewhere else.
Looking turned into planning, and then one day, planning turned into action.
I walked downstairs, had my bags and stuff, and I told my family, I said, "Yo, I'm going to the beach, you know. No pun intended, I'm going to California. Love you guys, don't know what's going to happen."
Derek doesn't have a car or an airplane ticket. How is he planning to get to California? Will he find more opportunities or more of the same struggles? Find out next time as we continue to follow Derek Akal's struggle to stay. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Benny Becker.
Will the sun There's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
That story came to us from WMMT and the Ohio Valley Resource, which is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Music in that story came from Amethyst Kia and Jared Pickmead, courtesy of Apple Shop and June Apple Recordings. You can hear the next installment of Derek Akal's Struggle to Stay story next week on Inside Appalachia.